This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
I tried to teach him a ton of stuff, but what he did on Dancing with the Stars, I believe, was probably taught to him by his partner. And it's clear that I've seen him dance before. He's not a good dancer.
Welcome, welcome to After the Bell. I am still Corey Graves coming at you from the official ATB bunker deep in the heart of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Joining me this week, as always, the Zorak to my space ghost from NXT 2.0, Vic Joseph. Vic, what's the word, my friend?
Well, I, much like you, were going through a move, and as you can see around me, I'm in my own little bunker. It's not in the heart or around concrete like you have, so I don't know what we necessarily would call this, but I feel for you with the move that you just made, man, because it is tough.
You obviously wasted no time decorating, as you have WWE pay-per-view posters behind you. I still have a concrete wall because it involves drilling and things that I am not exactly skilled at yet. It's a work in progress, but eventually this will evolve into the Corey Graves Studios, and it will be absolutely amazing, and it will make Sam Roberts jealous, and I will never invite him into my basement to hang out and do sports entertainment content because, well, Sam doesn't want to come to Pittsburgh.
Well, that actually brings up something I want to ask you about. Do you enjoy putting together, well, first, did you put together furniture? Did you put together anything? Do you like doing that?
Listen, believe it or not, as much as everybody likes to think that we are as a company full of bougie human beings who have no interest and more money than we know what to do with. Hell yes, I built a lot of my own furniture. I went to IKEA. Vic, have you ever built anything from IKEA?
As a matter of fact, what the computer is on right now is the only thing I put together, which was a swivel desk. And it took me all of about 9 hours. And that is not an exaggeration. It started about 2 o'clock and it ended midway through Monday Night Raw.
Okay, well, I'm glad I didn't enlist you to assist me in building my furniture. But your boy over here can build IKEA furniture like nobody's business.
I did have some assistance.
I'm sorry?
Did you get a PAC system yet?
What's a PAC system?
Well, yeah, look that one up and then put that together. You put that together. I'll fly you down here to put together our PAC system. It's a whole closet that you put together. Like, you make your own closet out of these systems that all fit together.
Can I really make myself look bad by what I'm about to admit?
Uh-oh.
My better half is paying somebody to create a closet. So I'm stepping on my own little stand here. But yes, I actually inherited closet space in this place.
To piggyback off you, your designer is actually helping us design. So that makes my life that much easier anyways.
You're using the same designer?
Dude, we have the same taste, even down to the bathroom. We have the same panel wall.
Tremendous.
And do you know what a daybed is?
Yeah, I built one from IKEA. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm looking at one now. I have no idea what it is. So I don't think anyone wants to hear about my unhandiness and your handiness because this isn't making me look like a man.
You don't know what a daybed is?
No, I never heard of a freaking daybed. I heard of a couch and a love seat and a chair and a recliner. The hell's a daybed?
Vic, I have never been more ashamed of you. So let's talk about something that we should not be ashamed about, something that should be celebrated, something that you are very, very familiar with and the WWE universe is still becoming familiar with. NXT 2.0, second week out of the gate. I was a fan. I dig it. What do you think in your ringside?
Dude, I'm having so much fun because this to me is something new. It's something fresh. There's a vibe to it. There's a piece of authenticity to it that I'm very proud to be a part of. And we talked about it last week, being able to gravitate to somebody. And the NXT Universe has picked that superstar, at least I think, and I want your opinion on it, and it's Bron Breakker. You know, last night in the main event, Tuesday night in the main event, he reached for the tag. This place went crazy for that individual. And that's what's special about NXT 2.0 is there's so many different flavors of ice cream. But what's fun about it is now you can grab on and you can hitch your wagon to somebody and you can go on the journey of that individual's career. That's what's special about it to me.
And that, and we talked about it last week. To me, that was what made NXT special in its infancy. The first go-round, whenever you had your members of the Shield who were individuals and there were different characters and different superstars with different traits. And that's what I'm noticing a lot of in NXT 2.0, and I really dig it. I hate to use the word gimmick, because in this day and age, that's not what we want. We don't want gimmicks, but we need personalities. We need character traits. And I've seen glimpses of a lot of those just in a short period of 2 weeks. And it reminds me of a conversation I actually had this past Monday. We were watching what was going on in the on our TV, and without selling anybody down the river, a dignitary, a higher up in the company, was watching the screen and leaned into me and said, "What is this person missing?" And I watched for a minute and I said, "I don't know how to sell them." And the person I was speaking to looked at me and nodded in agreement and said, "I was thinking the same thing." Because ultimately, this is the sports entertainment business. Our job, your job, and my job as commentators is to sell characters, to sell storylines, to sell. We are salesmen in one way, shape, or form. And without having a feature on whatever it is that you're trying to sell, it becomes a much tougher sell. If you're selling refrigerators, it's a refrigerator. We've got lots of refrigerators. I don't know one refrigerator from another. But if you can walk into somebody in their house and say, "Hey, if you buy this refrigerator, it also does this, it does that, it does the other thing, it's got a freezer." It doesn't matter what you're selling. You have to have features to be able to sell to a consumer. And so when you see a superstar on the screen, no matter how amazingly athletic they can be or how cool they may look, if you can't add any depth to that person, then they are just another superstar. And I think that's kind of what NXT got lost in. And I don't mean this from a negative place, but up until a few weeks ago, there were 30 guys on NXT who were unbelievable wrestlers, who are sports entertainers. But tell me, without me ever seeing them for myself, what makes X superstar different from Y superstar, different from B superstar, different from C superstar? You have to differentiate yourself and stand out. It makes our jobs much easier because now you have tangible qualities to say, "Oh, this person is this way because of this. Their mentality is such that they want this." And it all fits. It's all a giant package. But that's what I think NXT 2.0 has done a great job of in 2 weeks, is at least creating interest, going, "Oh, here's this guy." And just by looking at them or seeing a 30-second vignette, you have an idea of who they are. You may not know exactly. You don't know all the details. You don't know what makes them tick, and psychologically you can't analyze them, but you have a jumping off point. And I think that is of the utmost importance. And you look at all the greats throughout WWE history and sports entertainment, you can generally categorize them or at least have an idea as to what they're. Stone Cold Steve Austin, he's the bionic redneck. He's a redneck. He's a hillbilly, likes to drink beer. He doesn't like authority. Okay, great. I can do a lot with that. Talk about Triple H. Even back to when Triple H was the Greenwich Blue Blood, he was better than everybody. He thought that he was this cultural elite and he was above everybody. And then obviously the character grows and adapts and evolves, and you put more clay on the mold, and it grows and it becomes more and more of a work of art. And I think NXT 2.0 has done a great job in 2 short weeks of at least establishing several really strong jumping off points for future talents to build from.
Well, we always talk about the onion, right? You add layers to the onion. The onion has so many layers as you start to peel them back. And that's the same thing with talent in the WWE, talent NXT 2.0. And the one thing you brought up that I think might connect with those that are listening to ATV, if you go buy a car, well, I want that one. Well, this one has GPS. Well, this one has power windows. It's the other things that it has that make it more special. And the way you can go, "Oh, well, do I want that vehicle or this vehicle?" well, that vehicle has 10 more different things. I can actually do more with that. You understand what's more valuable over there because there's different pieces of the puzzle. There's more, to use your terminology, there's more selling points towards an individual.
And you keep, it's the oldest analogy in the game, the flavors of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
To use your car analogy, every superstar has four wheels and doors and a windshield.
And an engine. Right?
Everybody that walks through that door knows how to perform in the ring. Now, some people are going to gravitate more toward aerial athletes and guys who do cool moves. And that's totally fine. If that's your flavor of ice cream, you love that, more power to you. Some people love strong characters. Notice throughout WWE history, the biggest stars were more about personality and charisma and emotion.
Than anything else, man.
Hogan, Rock, Austin.
Cena.
The list goes on. Right. And that doesn't mean they may not be master technicians in the ring, but they have something about them. John Cena, back to how do you sell John Cena? John Cena's Superman, right? You can't call him Clark Kent. He's John Cena. But when it comes down to it, Cena jumps in the phone booth, comes out and defeats whatever is opposing
him. Hustle, loyalty, respect.
Right. You need these things. They are of the utmost importance, maybe not on the independents or for the hardcore of hardcore fans who just love sports entertainment so much that they like to analyze move sets and spots, et cetera, but to the public, to the WWE universe, which is a phrase we use on purpose because it's big. It is all encompassing. We are a global company. So you have to have varieties of flavors of ice cream. That's why Baskin Robbins is still in business. There's an amazing mom and pop shop right down at the corner from my new house. It's a local business. It's got some of the best ice cream I've ever had, but they've only got about 8 flavors and they change them and they rotate them. So I may have loved what I got last week, but I don't know for a fact that I can walk down the street and get the same thing next week. Consistency is important in business, in life, and above all in sports entertainment. That's why I think this whole it was almost an experiment up until last week, or it felt that way. We weren't sure what's it going to look like, what's it going to be. But now with 2 weeks, and it will continue to grow and adapt and evolve, and it won't look next week like it looked last week, and vice versa. But it's good and it's healthy for the future of WWE and for all of the talent coming through the doors of the Performance Center to have opportunities and figure things out. There are so many new faces. I haven't been to the Performance Center around NXT for over a year.
Over a year, yeah.
So to see a lot of these people, despite being in the company, these are fresh faces to me. I don't know anything about these guys. Like I said last week, I knew of Bron Breakker, but I never saw Bron Breakker. And I saw him, and I was in. And I saw him again this past week, and a little more in. And now I'm curious. Now I want to see what this guy does, what this guy grows into, what he adapts into, where he evolves. I think it's awesome. I think it's exciting.
Well, Bron Breakker one day could make that transition and continue to grow and one day headline an event like Extreme Rules, just like the former NXT champion is, that being Finn Balor. But it's not the same Finn Balor that I saw during his time in NXT.
No, this is not your standard run-of-the-mill Finn. Mm-hmm. We've got the Demon coming to Columbus to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship at Extreme Rules this Sunday, streaming live, WWE Network on Peacock. How do you see this one playing out, Vic?
Man, I'm pretty pumped to see the Demon. I mean, he is, it's hard to describe, and it's the whole visual. Not just the individual, it's the visual of looking up when you're watching the TV and you see the ceiling and it starts to lower down and it's the red swirl of clouds and then the almost like Gene Simmons playing the bass and then crawling out of the smoke is the Demon and he rises up. But he's going to rise up against the head of the table, Roman Reigns. And it's like, I think we say it every week. Is there anyone better in the world right now, Graves, than Roman Reigns? Because he has been on a run of a lifetime, and I don't see it ending Sunday in Columbus.
I've got to agree with you. I have a feeling that the Demon is going to rise and the sky is going to fall and get Superman punched in the mouth because Roman Reigns is just on a whole other level. And it was evident this past Monday night on Raw when the Bloodline came from Friday Night SmackDown to Monday Night Raw, kicked off the show. It felt huge. The atmosphere in Raleigh, North Carolina was unbelievable because you had a bunch of heavy hitters in the ring to start the night. Oh, and by the way, we would find out that at the end of the night, you get to see arguably the three biggest, heaviest hitters in the game in the same match. Roman Reigns, Bobby Lashley, the new WWE champion, Big E. It was fun. It was awesome. And I think it really, really set the tone for the week of Extreme Rules. To your point, Roman Reigns, once again, last man standing. The end of the night, Monday Night Raw goes off the air. Who are we talking about? The head of the table. Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor this Sunday. I have no doubt it's going to be unbelievable. If you remember back to when Finn first got drafted to Monday Night Raw, it was within, it might have been the first night I was on Raw. It was the first few shows. And Roman threw down with Finn Balor, the number one pick for Monday Night Raw. And it was a banger, an unbelievable matchup. Both superstars have evolved and improved in the time since then. I mean, that was Roman Reigns, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago almost.
Different playing field
Nowhere
now, man.
Close to the amazing superstar that we get to witness each and every week. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's worth the price of the pay-per-view in and of itself. I think this is a big-time matchup, and I think it's going to have the entire WWE universe buzzing by Monday.
I'm really excited to see those two clashes you mentioned for the first, you know, since the original time that they met back when to what they're doing now. Two totally different superstars, two totally different characters. It's going to be an unbelievable matchup. But that's not the only match I'm interested in. Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, SmackDown Women's Championship, the evolution of the man in a very short time has been very interesting to me, per se, sitting back and watching her come back to this ovation, to this new kind of mindset that she has. That in itself sells this match for me, going all the way back to Bianca's, I guess, crowning achievement, you'd say, at WrestleMania.
So to me, when it comes to this matchup, I would say this Sunday is a must win for Bianca Belair. Because at SummerSlam, the world was shocked. The world wasn't necessarily happy. They were excited that Becky was back, but people weren't exactly happy that she robbed Bianca Belair in however many seconds it was. And I think there's a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth regarding that. I think this is of the utmost importance for Bianca to show up and show out like she does, as she's proven to do, particularly on pay-per-view, since she's really come into her own. I think Bianca needs to take this on Sunday. Otherwise, I think the steam that has been built under Bianca, I think it's almost, think of it like a pressure valve. At SummerSlam, Bianca was red hot, red hot. She was about to take on Sasha Banks, big change. Here comes the man. Now everybody's looking at the man. Oh my God, feel good, blah, blah, blah. It lets some of the steam out of Bianca Belair. But in the aftermath, the WWE Universe rallied and went, you know what? This sucks. We don't like this. We're not happy that Becky Lynch beat Bianca. And it increased the pressure in the valve. It's, oh, okay, now Bianca's going to blow up. Sunday's got to be when she blows. If she doesn't, then it's going to release the pressure again. And who knows when Bianca's going to find herself at the top of the card. I mean, it could be one of those cases where, hey, there's a draft coming up. If Bianca doesn't show up on Sunday and dethrone Becky Lynch, I would, as a Monday Night Raw advocate or as someone who's on the show, I would love to have Bianca on Monday nights.
Oh, why wouldn't you? Yeah.
Change the scene. Change, you know what I mean? Maybe, you know, change your plan of attack. It worked for Big E. Maybe Bianca should do the same thing. I think it's of the utmost importance. That said, I think Bianca's going to do it. I think the EST reclaims the SmackDown Women's Championship, and I think that will be almost as shocking to the WWE Universe to see the man go down in her first official match post-SummerSlam. I think it'll be just as shocking as when it happened at SummerSlam to Bianca.
Well, Becky doesn't have the element of surprise, as you mentioned, for Bianca Belair. This match, in some ways, is, for different reasons, more important and bigger for her career than WrestleMania. And it's at Extreme Rules this Sunday because, to your point, if you can't step up, you get forgotten sometimes. And this is a pressure situation for Bianca Belair. I will never bet against Becky Lynch, though, because she is the man for a reason. So I still think Becky Lynch will walk out with gold around her waist.
I never suggested betting against Becky Lynch.
I'm just saying that you picked one way, I picked the other.
I'm just saying I think this is what needs to happen. But time will tell. We'll see how the cards fall this coming Sunday on Peacock. There's a lot more to get to, Vic. We can talk more Extreme Rules, but we have got America's Most Wanted our way in a matter of moments. John Morrison joining the show. A lot to catch up with Johnny Drip Drip regarding, well, he hasn't done ATB since he's been back in WWE. I can't wait to find out what this is all about. Vic, the time has arrived. Roll up your pant legs, grab the towels. There is a flood incoming to After the Bell. Please welcome for the first time ever on ATB, Johnny Drip Drip himself, John Morrison. Welcome to the show, man.
Good to be here. Man, towel is one of the only things that gets wetter and wetter the more it dries. Johnny Drip Drip approves of that, if you know what I mean. Just hoping everyone's have a nice, moist morning.
This is going to be one for the ages with the mayor of Slamtown. First things first, John, the After the Bell universe has been clamoring. They have been wondering. They need directly from the star's mouth. Do you have the ability to recap the plot of WrestleMania?
Yeah, okay. So WrestleMania. There's this... You know how sometimes someone comes into the locker room and they think they know everything, you know? They haven't paid any dues. They just show up and they're acting like they're like a 10-year vet. Well, there's this dog, a Jack Russell Terrier. He shows up into the locker room. I play the character of Hammer, Helix the Hammer Monroe. And I'm kind of like the seasoned vet, and this dog shows up. And first thing that happens is he does a couple like high-flying things. And then I put the boots to him, teach him a lesson, hit him with a dog whistle, you know? And beat him. But he doesn't read the contract, because the contract states that if he loses to me, that me and the promoter, who was played by Cliff from Cheers, own him. So now we own the dog, and his family is obviously upset that their beloved family pet is now owned by the Hammer and Cliff from Cheers. So they get one chance to win the dog's freedom. And it's this kid and the dog versus me and a big German guy. And he got lucky in the win.
No spoilers. Freedom. You don't have to spoil it.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
We just want to know how it ends.
The overarching theme of WrestleMania.
If the movie ended where like we owned the dog forever, it would be a very realistic. This is for how most wrestling works. But B, probably not a family movie. I have to say there's a couple things that were very rewarding. One, going for like a handshake and tricking the dog. Why is it so fun to trick dogs? Like, shake, bud. Oh, got your ass. And the dog whistle thing. Man, also pinning a dog. Why is that fun?
Did you hook the leg on the dog?
Yeah, I couldn't. Oh, okay. I was nervous. He was too small. I thought I was going to crush him. I was also very nervous. I went for a top rope corkscrew. And man, if that thing didn't move.
It could have been catastrophic.
Count to 100.
Of course, for any of the uninitiated here in the ATB audience that is not familiar with what we're talking about, we are referencing one of the multiple journeys that Mr. Morrison took during his hiatus from WWE. Obviously, everybody is familiar with your first run, Eminem, all of the incredible accomplishments you had, winning the ECW championship. And then John Morrison was gone from the WWE psyche. You stayed very busy, though, not only making movies such as WrestleMania, Boone the Bounty Hunter, which is my favorite to plug just because it's fun to say.
It's the best one, probably. Boone the Bounty.
It is the best one. Yeah, that's what you're most proud of your body
There's
of work.
Two that I'm proud of. Boone the Bounty Hunter, which is one that I wrote, produced, and starred in, and a short that came out recently called The Speed of Time, which I highly recommend.
Where can we find these?
The Speed of Time is on YouTube on a channel called Dust, but it won the Orlando Film Festival for Best Short. It won about 12 festivals is best short. I got the best actor at a very small festival somewhere in Wisconsin.
Hey, it counts.
And they won a bunch of best VFX awards too. In addition to like good movies, I've done a bunch of crap too. So
is it something you've always been into, even beyond sports entertainment? Have you always kind of had the passion and desire to be an actor or check out that aspect of entertainment?
I was a film major. So I graduated from UC Davis with a degree in film and geology. And I think I'd started doing geology thinking I was going to be Indiana Jones. And then when you realize in like chemistry class and physics that it's not like Indiana Jones. There's a lot of paperwork and a lot of scientific calculations. And even if it's Like, I thought seismic exploration was pretty cool, where you set a bunch of charges and look for like oil reserves and different types of mineral reserves. But all the really good ones have already been found. So now to do that, you need to take a sub really deep into foreign waters. And if you find this stuff, it's not even like your...
It's not yours because it belongs to whoever owns the land.
It's Paraguay's coastline. So they own the...
Well, now you can make a film about rocks.
Exactly.
Or you can make a film about being the new Indiana Jones, which brings me to this question. What are you working on now?
Okay. So actually, I'm pretty excited about this. And you've heard about this. The Iron Sheik Massacre, which is... I picture locked it a few days ago, and that doesn't mean that it's done. It means that it's going to music and sound. And the gist of it is it's about a doll that becomes sentient and murders people. Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Very, very cool. Well, you're having a lot of fun off screen with your WWE ventures. Tell me more about your time away. What did you miss most? What eventually led you back to the land of WWE?
It's pretty crazy to like compare the two. Say WWE is like an express train, right? Like you get on and you just like shoot through life and you leave a crazy legacy, just a ton of stuff that you've done because you're doing live TV and it's out there every week and live shows in front of all these people. You're missing a lot of creative autonomy, which is what I've, the whole in, I don't know, my like, thing of what I really wanted to have it be when I was starting wrestling was I have a million ideas and WWE is a live show. They don't have time for everyone's ideas. They have to produce Raw, SmackDown, NXT, NXT UK. There's so much stuff that some of like my really nuanced ideas, one, might not even work in the world of pro wrestling. And two, if every talent's frustrated because they're not getting to do exactly what they want, but realistically, that's how it is. There's no time.
Sure.
You can't just say, hey, roster, what does everyone want to do?
Okay. Otherwise, Raw would be 13 hours long every week.
Yeah. It's just not how it works. So I feel like you trade this, like leaving this big footprint and legacy and doing a lot of sometimes awesome things and sometimes things that you're not super stoked about for leaving and having way more creative autonomy, getting to do exactly what you want. But Boone the Bounty Hunter took 5 years. The first version, $10 million script. John Morrison 2012 was like, oh, no problem. I'm John Morrison. Someone will give me $10 million. No, not even close. No one's giving a first-time pro wrestler filmmaker $10 million. So as we rewrote, the script got cheaper and cheaper to the point where I kind of felt like if I don't make this movie, it's never going to happen. So I ended up self-funding and selling my place in Manhattan Beach and making it for about a half mil. And it was kind of exactly what I want, except I didn't have like the money to make it the complete vision.
Sure.
You know, like the part where like we're having the car race the wrong way on the 405. No budget for that, for example.
What led to Johnny Drip Drip?
I would say I pitch a weird idea at least one every week.
Oh, nothing wrong with that.
Johnny Drip Drip was my rap name for the very first rap song that The Miz and I did. And I got it because I like to rap to Cardi B, mostly to annoy Frankie, and especially if there's a car full of her friends. Then it's like, Drip Drip is lit. He hit like a kick from a Brit kid. You a wannabe Johnny. So, you know, this awful rapping that I do got me the name Johnny Drip Drip, and I just kind of kept it. But then it kind of moved into like who I was all the time for some reason.
This is the most authentic Morrison that we're getting is Johnny Drip Drip.
Oh yeah.
He's also a bad influence because he gets me in trouble a lot.
Oh yeah. Vic, when we hang out, like you sing songs, you say all kinds of dumb stuff.
Yes, we do.
It's great.
Graves, if you think like put me in the car, but then add Johnny Drip Drip to it and then me saying more obnoxious things.
Oh, yeah.
We had a conversation with my mom at 3 a.m. one time that we cannot repeat here on this podcast that I'm would make even Graves blush.
That you talked to your mom that way.
I was.
I have been privy to some of Vic's but phone calls.
But also, Vic's mom loves it.
Yeah.
She's flattered.
It's a very unique situation. No doubt about that. So Vic mentioned your rap videos with Miz. So you return during the pandemic era of WWE, which is not ideal for basically anybody, but that's now the platform.
There's a Reddit that said Morrison signing back to WWE about a month before the pandemic might be the best business decision in wrestling history. Which is complete luck, obviously.
So you're back, and obviously the pandemic era will live on in infamy throughout WWE history for one reason or another. You right. And Miz, I have to give you all the credit because Vic and I sat there ringside for the majority of these long tapings, and they were grueling, and let's be perfectly honest, they weren't a lot of fun. You and Miz, for me, was definitely one of the bright spots every week because it was so different. It was so entertaining. Did that allow you, particularly the hip-hop videos and all of the in-ring antics, were you allowed to exercise your creativity a little more than usual in that time frame?
The one big plus about the pandemic, I mean, you pretty much nailed it, is the pace of everything is faster because there's no crowd. In my opinion, it should be at least. Because if you're doing something and there's no live crowd reaction, just kind of standing there starts to seem really dumb.
Right.
But it also opens the door for other types of entertainment, like the rap videos or the dirt sheets. And it's more like a TV like talk show without a live crowd than it would be like an in-ring promo. And we embraced that right away. I mean, one of the very first promos we cut was or dirt sheets that we did was let's ask the crowd what they think about us. And then we dressed up and pretended like we were in the crowd and cheering for ourselves. And I think there was a ton of drawbacks, obviously, about the pandemic era or whatever it's called, Thunderdome era. But the plus is the opportunity to be creative in different ways.
The one that stands out to me the most, and Graves, you were there for it, was I think it was Mandy Rose's hair.
So usually, like between the Miz and I, like I'm the one that comes up with like really, really far out there things. And Miz has to be the guy that's like, John, that's just too dumb.
When Miz is the voice of reason, that's quite a scenario.
We pushed through Mandy Rose's hair. I was originally wanting to do kind of like one of those like Hollywood documentaries of like the rise and fall of Mandy's hair.
Okay.
Clearly like a 20-minute like docudrama about Mandy's hair and like the split ends and like the trials and tribulations wasn't going to fit. So we just did like a shorter version.
You and Miz in particular stand out as two guys who seem to be having a blast. You've got a lot of freedom and get to really sort of express yourself and have a lot of fun and stand out for that reason. How did John Morrison personally figure out and navigate that line?
I said I figured it out. I would err on the side of driving myself crazy with ideas. But that's kind of how I work. My wheels spin. Like I'm just constantly like on overdrive. The key that I think to making a lot of things work that people forget is wrestling is supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be having a good time. And formerly, I really enjoyed working with The Miz and coming up with ideas. And he's one of those guys that it doesn't matter how dumb an idea is, especially if it's a poop joke, he'll love it. He'll die laughing. And then you can kind of build something and go back and forth. And it's usually fun. And in that case, we were lucky because most of our ideas pertained to our opponents. And even if you don't, like I have a ton of like weird dirt sheet scripts written and other ideas that never got used. But I started realizing that, you know, I like the process of writing it and thinking it through. And if it never happens, maybe not ever, still like the half a day that I spent writing a detailed fight against the Easter Bunny was still kind of fun. And I ended up hurting my knee, so I couldn't do it. But like, I don't regret doing it. It was still like kind of an interesting way to spend an afternoon.
John, talk to me a little bit more about The Miz. I know obviously currently you guys aren't on the best of terms, but since you returned, the two of you have been inseparable. Even your first run, you guys had a great deal of success together. What has Miz meant to you and your career?
I'll start by talking about The Miz in past tense a little bit. There's in the scheme of the wrestling business, there's certain people that become like really close friends, and there's a lot of people that become friends and some that become acquaintances, and some that you want to slap the potato chips off the table that they're sitting at in catering. When I first met The Miz, I thought he was a real just like everyone else.
I was going to say, that's the general consensus at first. Yes.
But when we started tagging together, like I hadn't really spent the time to like get to know him or talk to him. And after we had done just our first loop of live events together and we're in a car together talking, I was like, oh, like, you know, when he's just kind of with you and you're talking one-on-one, he's a really great guy. Like he's loyal. He's got the same dreams and hopes as everyone. He really loves wrestling and he's kind of funny, but he thinks that everything I say is funny, which makes
makes you like him even more.
Yeah. It's a confidence booster, you know, right? What I mean, but we're on the same wavelength humor wise. And then, so that's kind of how, like, I was like, you know what? I think that this tag team could be a lot of fun. And it turned out to evolve and become even more fun than I thought. And then I was in his wedding. He was in my wedding. We became like more than just like tag team partners and coworkers, like real friends. And when you're working with somebody that you really enjoy the company of and you're on the same wavelength and you have chemistry on screen, it makes everything better. And there's a lot of tag teams out there. Like, I mean, like the Usos, clearly, like New Day, like those, it's not just like three guys that hate each other that show up to work. No way. Like the New Day, you can tell, like,
it's genuine. You cannot.
They're best friends.
Create authenticity like that. I agree completely. Right.
And so I think that's kind of how I felt about working with Miz. And also I appreciated that for some reason I'm obsessed with like doing songs and music videos, even though I can't really sing. I just like writing and thinking of like silly things to do and say. And Miz would usually go from like, we can't do that, to like, maybe be like, okay. We gotta do this thing now since you emailed Neil and we got it approved.
Well, that goes back to working with Bad Bunny, you know, and yeah, the fun you guys had.
I think that the reason that worked so well was, first of all, actually, Bad Bunny. I mean, that guy, for being such a huge megastar, came into the WWE and just went for it. Like, he was going to work hard and try to make everything work. And for me, it was like the best opportunity to make fun of somebody that's a real recording artist.
Right. And yeah, those opportunities don't come along too frequently.
No, you know, and I think what I said earlier about you should be having fun. It was really fun for Miz and I to do a diss track on Bad Bunny. It was fun to make fun of him. And he was having fun too. And I think that's what made everything work. And when I say having fun, it doesn't mean like we're like laughing and like hugging each other on TV. Sometimes it's fun to kick someone's ass. Sometimes it's fun to like sweat someone. Sometimes it's fun to sucker punch someone. And it should be. It that's how I look at it. I'm not the kind of guy that is evil, so to speak. I'm the kind of guy that, like, maybe if I shank someone on the side of the back, it's kind of fun. Gotcha. You know? But all there's different fun types of characters. And, like, if you can figure out the authentic version of yourself, then it should be fun. And it should be fun to watch.
So the other part of the equation regarding Bad Bunny was Damian Priest, someone you've competed with semi-regularly for the past few months. What's it been like for you to now, to your point earlier, as an elder statesman, as a locker room veteran, to work with this new crop of talent in WWE?
One of the reasons I train so hard and keep pushing myself is so that I can, no one's going to say keep up. I mean, Priest is good. He's almost as good as me, if you know what I mean. But is because guys like Priest and Cross, Keith Lee, Riddle, there's like these phenomenal new talents and a ton of guys at NXT that are really interesting to me because each person is a new challenge. And I like having answers to all of their different kinds of moves. And I personally probably spend way too much time studying like Muay Thai, Wushu, American boxing, collegiate wrestling, parkour, martial arts tricking, and capoeira, trying to integrate all these movements into other people's moveset and arsenals to use as counters and or offense.
So you're not only thinking for yourself, you're also potentially thinking for opponents as well.
Yeah, because if you just think for yourself, it's
it takes two to tango. I get what you're saying. You have to.
Well, that's there's the some magic. People who just think for themselves, and sometimes in this business, they actually end up becoming stars because they're being more selfish, and there's something to be said for that too. But part of what I do is trying to tell a story in a way that's not been done before, movement-wise, and with like the backstory and promos. But the movement stuff is something that I take a lot of pride in. And it might not be what a lot of people think is worth it or even want, but it's what I like. And I think that's why I was at the parkour gym last night for 3 hours working on a bunch of new stuff. Because if I don't, it'll slip away. And one of the things that I take the most pride in will slowly erode.
Well, I got to ask, you know, with everything going on, you talk about all these moves. How many of those moves did you teach to The Miz, who obviously is on Dancing with the Stars and had a really damn nice showing, I want to add?
I got two texts from Frankie, 5 minutes apart. First one, oh, my God, Miz killed it. Such a good dance. Oh, my God, Miz needs to shut up. He won't stop talking. I watched it back. The interview, I thought he did really well on too. I tried to teach him a ton of stuff, but what he did on Dancing with the Stars, I believe was probably taught to him by his partner. And it's clear that I've seen him dance before. He's not a good dancer, but on Dancing with the Stars, he figured it out. He must've been doing 6 hours a day. Wow.
Yeah. It was impressive.
He could move like that.
No doubt about it. Well, now we've got Miz on Dancing with the Stars. Morrison, the draft is right around the corner. There are, of course, pay-per-views, Survivor Series around the bend. What is on the immediate horizon for Johnny Drip Drip?
Let's see. America's Most Wanted. I don't know. There's a lot of guys in this roster that are hurting for a squirting. Roman Reigns. I mean, tough to say he's not moist. I mean, that guy's hair is never not wet. It's almost like a superpower. I think I saw him at a breakfast buffet one time. Hair, super moist. I don't know how he does it. Big fan of that guy's hair. Seth Drippin' Rollins. The Drip King, the Drip Thief, I would say. I mean, I've been moist since like 3 years. And suddenly he's calling himself the Drip King. And then Becky Lynch comes out with, I think it was like one of the coats that Johnny Nitro wore in 2008.
It was repurposed, yes.
Oh, yeah. Very nice coat. Like, I was a big fan of it. But it's nice to know that they're both big fans of Johnny Drip Drip. There's guys that I've wrestled before in Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Bobby Lashley, kind of, because I've never had like kind of a real match mano-a-mano with Lashley. MVP, I've wrestled a bunch. There's a lot of guys that people don't realize that while I was gone, Keith Lee, T-Bar, Garza. I mean, I've had matches. I wrestled Garza in Monterey in front of 30,000 people for a half hour. Keith Lee, like T-Bar, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And the matches we had back then were phenomenal, some of my favorites. And we haven't been able to have that time or the ability to recreate some of those moments on Raw or SmackDown yet. So what I would really like is the opportunity to do what I think I do best on a show that people watch.
it was a bold, broad brushstroke, but it was efficient. So yeah. I hope for your sake, I hope for the WWE Universe's sake, you get to run it back with Garza, maybe with T-Bar, and get to do so.
Or like I said, like Roman Reigns, I did a 3-on-3 with him, but like a singles match would be awesome. Rollins, I've never wrestled against.
Oh, that one just got me excited.
That'd be interesting.
That'd be awesome. Finn Balor, huge fan of him. Never wrestled him. Pete Dunne, I had an awesome match with once that like somehow got lost the tape. But I was shocked at how good he was because he's like 22, 23.
He's got a big, bright future ahead of him. Yeah. So
Walter, I'd like to wrestle Walter because he's not Bowie, but Presley, my other dog's favorite wrestler. And so Presley was tweeting Walter for like 6 months. Every time he came out, like Presley would watch his theme music. And then the first time I met Walter at Rumble before the lockdown started, I was a little too excited. Maybe he walked in and I was talking to like Edge and Christian and a bunch of the guys. And I screamed like across the room at him, like, Walter, hey, Walter, you're my dog's favorite wrestler. And I like ran over and I think I spooked him because he turned around and left. And I haven't talked to him since. I don't know what happened. I think I spooked him or like he thinks I'm crazy, but I hope he just knows that I was excited for my dog.
For Presley's sake, I personally hope we get to see John Morrison and Walter somewhere down the line. Johnny Drip Drip, keep doing what you're doing. We are all enjoying it. Good luck. I hope you stay on Monday Night Raw so we get to hang out because you're one of the highlights of my week every week. So,
man, I'm my highlight of my week every week too.
We'll see what the future holds. And in the meantime, I am going to go check out Boone the Bounty Hunter. I'm going to track it down later today when I finally get to breathe a little bit.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man. Anytime. You're always welcome on ATB.
Woof, yeah. That was for WrestleMania.
Well, there you have it, Vic. The most moist sea edition of After the Bell of all time. Always fun to catch up with Johnny Drip Drip. Always fun to follow all things After the Bell. And you can do just that on Twitter at After the Bell WWE. We're on Instagram and Facebook at the same link. You can follow me at WWE Graves. You can find him at Vic Joseph WWE. Listen to ATB for free on Spotify. Just search After the Bell and hit the follow button so you never miss an episode. You can keep up with all your favorite shows in the WWE Podcast Network by following at WWE Podcasts on all social media platforms. We'll be back next week with more wisdom, more vitriol, and more WWE After the Bell.